What is the true Catholic Church teaching on the issue of homosexuality? Stay with us. Catholic Parents Online is next. Hello and welcome to Catholic Parents Online, a program where we explore the issues Catholic parents face while raising their children. I'm your host, Colleen Perfect. In this program, part one of three, we will examine the issue of homosexuality and discuss what the Catholic Church teaches about same-sex attraction. Joining us today is Father John Lavore, a priest from the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis. Father Lavore oversees a wonderful Catholic support group for people struggling with same-sex attraction. Thank you very much for being here today, Father.
You're welcome, Colleen. You're welcome.
Father, the group that I just mentioned for people struggling with same-sex attraction is an international group mm-hmm. called Courage.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And in this archdiocese, it's called by another name, Faith in Action,
right.
because the name Courage was already taken
That's
by
right.
the Courage Center.
Right, right.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Well, could you talk a little bit about what Courage is and who belongs to it and what its goals are?
Sure, sure. Maybe I could mention a little bit, first of all, how I got involved in Faith in Action. It was 1997, and Archbishop Flynn was the Archbishop of St. Paul and Minneapolis. And unbeknownst to me, there had been some people who had written him who asked him to start a Courage group in the Twin Cities. And they were struggling with same-sex attractions, and they saw the value in this kind of a group. So Archbishop Flynn invited Father John Harvey, who founded Courage back in 1980. He founded it at the behest of Cardinal Cook in New York. Cardinal Cook wanted a support group for people who had same-sex attractions, and he asked Father Harvey to do that. So mm-hmm. Father Harvey founded Courage in the Archdiocese of New York, and then it has spread throughout the country and then to other countries. But anyway, Archbishop Flynn invited Father Harvey to come and to stay with him at the Chancery for a couple of days, and was very interested in starting a Courage group. Well, the summer went on and nothing had happened, and a couple of the people who wanted this group got my name from somewhere, I don't know where, and they asked me, you know, what should they do? And I said, well, you know, we're going to have a priest meeting down in Rochester, and I'll see the Archbishop, and I'll ask him, you know, if he had thought any more about starting a Courage group. So I did. I saw the Archbishop in Rochester. It was toward the end of the summer, and I said, Archbishop, had you thought any more about having a Courage group? Oh, yes, he said. I'm glad you reminded me. And he said, I want you to be my chaplain. So that's how I got chosen.
Okay.
And so we started a meeting. A couple of fellows that were interested mm-hmm. came to the first meeting, and then Courage has been developing and growing ever since. And right now in the Twin Cities, we have three groups for people who have same-sex attractions, two men's groups and a women's group. So we've come a ways. And the goals of Courage, it's a spiritual support group. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, there are different kinds of support groups, psychological and so forth. There are those kinds of elements in Courage, but primarily it's a spiritual support group. Mm-hmm. Its purpose really is to help people to be holy, to follow mm-hmm. Christ. Mm-hmm. And so the goals that Courage had, there are five goals. These were goals that were written up by the first group, the first members of the first group way back in 1980. And they are to live chaste lives in accordance with the Roman Catholic Church's teachings on homosexuality. So this idea of chastity is very important. Mm-hmm. And chastity is a virtue, and it helps us to integrate our sexuality into our whole person, and also to respond to God's call to us, our vocation, and to exercise our sexuality in the way that God has called us, whatever mm-hmm. vocation we were called to. And primarily, sexuality should be exercised only within the context of marriage. Mm-hmm. And so chastity means that in marriage we have the normal kinds of sexual relationship between a man and a woman that occur within marriage. Outside marriage, sexuality would not be exercised in a genital way. Mm-hmm. So basically that's that's the fundamental teaching on the church's teaching on chastity. And for people who are suffering same-sex attractions, some of these people are married, some are single, and those who are single, chastity means not exercising their sexuality in a genital way. And for those who are married, obviously it does within the context of, right, of marriage with their husband or wife. So that's the first goal, and the Catholic Church's teachings are very important. This is a Catholic support group, so we do follow the Church's teaching on sexuality. Secondly, to dedicate our entire life to Christ through service to others, spiritual reading, prayer, meditation, individual spiritual direction, frequent attendance at Mass, and the frequent reception of the sacraments of reconciliation and the Holy Eucharist. Now, that's a program for holiness for anybody.
That's right.
The prayer, the sacraments, spiritual direction, the commandments, those are all ways that we have to become holy. So you can see right away the spiritual emphasis. Mm-hmm. Third, to foster a spirit of fellowship in which we may share with one another our thoughts and experiences, and so ensure that none of us will have to face the problems of homosexuality alone. This is a very important element, that spirit of fellowship. Mm-hmm. I found that in working with the members of Courage or Faith in Action, that isolation is something that is something to stay away from, because when you get isolated, then you start thinking just about yourself, and then you have a tendency to act out. And so the fellowship is very important. And again, it's a chaste fellowship. Mm-hmm. Four, to be mindful of the truth that chaste friendships are not only possible, but necessary. You know, that's very important. They're not just possible, but necessary. We need them in a chaste Christian life, and to encourage one another in forming and sustaining them. This is, as I say, an important element. And there might be, say, for instance, a person in the group who is experiencing some difficulties. I encourage them always, call me, call one of the other members, connect up with somebody, because you don't want to be isolated. You need that fellowship, that support. Mm. And then finally, the last goal is to live lives that may serve as good examples to others. Mm-hmm. So again, it's very basic things, and really many things that we can all follow to be holy people.
Mm. Wonderful. Like you say, a good plan for everyone to live. Well, Father, talking about homosexuality as a sin, which people discuss, how does the Catholic Church handle that? I know the Catechism has some good things to say in that respect.
Right. It's really important to differentiate the same-sex attraction itself, the inclination, and the act, mm-hmm. What the group members call acting out.
Right.
And the inclination itself is a... It is a disorder, because it tends to move us to act in ways that are contrary to the gospel. So it's disordered in that way. And when you think about it, we all have disorders. We all have difficulties. We're attracted to things, to do things that we shouldn't do, whether it be with regard to food or sexuality or pleasure or whatever. We all have those disorders. That's one of the effects of original sin. We all have problems. So to have those struggles is not sinful. The sin comes in when a person consciously and freely chooses to engage in activity with someone of the same sex. Mm-hmm. Then that's where the sinfulness comes in, and that's clear from the scriptures. St. Paul talks about it several times in his letters.
Right.
And so the Catechism really is based on the scripture, the tradition of the church.
Okay. And then Faith in Action, does it require a change in feelings or attraction?
No, it doesn't. What Faith in Action is primarily focused on is living a chaste life.
Okay.
In other words, trying to be a holy person. There are some members who see that they want to change. They want to change their attractions. And there are psychiatrists, reputable ones, who will work with them on that. If someone wants to do that, certainly we would support that. But if they do not, that's no problem either. It's whatever the person wants to do. The primary thing is to live a chaste life.
Because there are other groups out there that do stress that, but
there are.
Courage, faith, and action is not one of them.
It does not do that. Father Harvey, who still is alive and very much involved in Courage, makes that clear time and time again. This is not a change group.
Right. Yeah. Okay, I just want to, one last thing too. Faith in Action is not a hate group.
No, it isn't a hate group. No, we again concentrate on the positive, you know, the church's teachings on sexuality, to try to live those out. And again, I stress to the people involved that this is a program for holiness mm-hmm. and for happiness.
Right.
They wonder, well, gee, there are not a lot of people who are, you know, who are coming to the group. We know there are a lot out there who have same-sex attractions. Mm-hmm. Why aren't there more? And I say, you know, if you advertise a program for holiness, you're not going to get many people.
That's right.
And so that's what we concentrate on. We concentrate on, on the positive and living holy lives.
Well, Father, thank you so much for being here today and clearing up some of the misinformation that's going around. And God bless you in all your work that you're doing.
Thank you very much. And if anybody's interested in joining, they can call the Office of Marriage and Family Life of the Archdiocese.
Right. And we will put that on the that number on the website, on the screen later
in
the show.
Because we are under the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis. Right.
Okay, thanks again.
You're sure welcome.
Is there really such a thing as a gay gene? When we come back, we'll hear from a psychologist who has studied the issue of homosexuality. Again, joining me now is Paul Ruff, a licensed psychologist from the Twin Cities area. Welcome to our show, Paul.
Thank you, Glenn.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself, Paul, and your family?
Sure. I've been married for 20-plus years at this point.
Okay.
I have four children, ages 17 to 10.
Okay.
And two of them are at grade school, two in high school at this point. And I'm in a private practice in my professional life at this point, a solo practice in St. Paul.
Okay.
And I've been practicing as a therapist for 20-plus years at this point as well.
Okay, so you're dealing with clients who are struggling with same-sex attraction.
Right, and I wouldn't say that it is the specialty in any way of my practice, but something that I've become more and more familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And as a psychologist and as a Catholic, really have tried to develop a deeper understanding and appreciation of both the psychology and the way that fits with the church's teaching.
Good. Well, could you talk a little bit about the causes then of homosexuality and if it's genetic or if it's developmental?
Right. You know, really, no one can tell you the exact cause of homosexuality. And I think as we study it more, we can really see that it's what we'd say is a multivariable, multi-causal thing, as is all of human sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Though people have located some genetic predisposition, there's certainly nowhere near 100% concordance even between identical twins. It's more like 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to say there's quite a bit of room for environmental and developmental factors. What some of the genetics might be is really up for question. You know, people have theorized possibly some greater sensitivity in males especially with same-sex attraction. And maybe a little bit of reticence about engaging in sort of traditional masculine activities,
mm-hmm.
Which may lead to some alienation with peer group attachment or with father figures. In terms of some of the developmental causes, one of the sort of classic psychoanalytic ways of looking at same-sex attraction for males was a possibly over-involvement with the mother and lack of nurturance and involvement with the father.
Mm-hmm.
Though I wouldn't say that that is the cause, again, I do see that with a number of clients fitting the profile of families they come with. We certainly could say in our culture in general, there's an absence of fathers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we wouldn't want to just say that that is, if there's that absence, it's going to cause same-sex attraction.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to contribute to what I would call father hunger or hunger for male attachment. With women, we've seen possibly more relationship to the relationship with the mother. Depression, alcoholism, unavailability, lack of nurturance from a mother, seems to correlate with, for a number of women who are struggling with same-sex attraction. And then I think with adolescent males, which is really my greater familiarity working with young men who are dealing with this issue, I see a lot of peer group attachment difficulties. You know, those ages 10 through 15 where the boys are sorting out who can throw and catch the ball, who can run fast, who can't. That boys who are left out of that group, out of that sort of attachment, who don't really have that firm bonding with other males, have trouble then maybe owning their masculinity in a way that allows them to step into a heterosexual relationship. So those would all be theoretical. We couldn't say we've pinpointed causes, but I'd say they fit my clinical experience and that of other clinicians who approach this issue that I've been consulting with.
So as far as a gay gene, there is no gay gene. I mean,
no, there isn't.
There's no research that's been done on.
No, there's certainly research to say there seems to be a genetic predisposition, but we could say the same for depression or alcoholism or quite a number of issues. And we're really looking at something that's just a predisposition, not a causal factor genetically. And I don't think you could find a geneticist who would say this is genetically caused. Mm-hmm. It's much too complex a behavior, human sexuality, to have just a genetic cause.
So that leading into my next question then, being a disorder, if homosexuality is a disorder, could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. You know, and that disorder is sort of open to definition. If we look at the manual that as a psychologist I need to use, the DSM-4 psychiatric manual, about people who are experiencing what we could call egodystonic same-sex distraction, if they come in and say, I'm dealing with this issue, it leaves me very uncomfortable, then it's within the domain of psychology still to say there's some grounds for a diagnosis there. Mm-hmm. But setting the diagnostic criteria aside and speaking maybe more humanly, I certainly experience with clients that they find it quite a struggle. Mm-hmm. Both, I think, in terms of their own identity formation and feeling that something is missing there for them. Certainly the social difficulties with same-sex attraction are very real for them. Mm-hmm. But as I work with men on a deeper level, I see some real personal struggle with this as well that tells me that they're not at peace with this internally. And I think we could say biologically it's not the design of sexuality, so we could say there's some lack of order there.
Okay, and then about the changing of orientation. Can you talk a little bit about if that's possible?
Right. Moving back just a second to the previous question for a moment. If we look at it as a disorder in some way, I'd want to be very clear we're not talking about individuals being disordered people.
Right, okay.
At their core. I mean, depression is a disorder. Mm-hmm. You know, having the flu is a disorder.
Right.
You know, having hangnails is a disorder. Mm-hmm. So this is certainly a very important area that's being affected, but we don't want to start to equate this with the whole person. Mm-hmm. So is there room, was the next question, for change from same-sex attraction to opposite-sex attraction? You know, there is a school of therapy called reparative therapy that's quite controversial. You'd find proponents and definite detractors for that. Mm-hmm. People who have done more work with this than I have, and from a perspective of seeing change as possible, definitely report clinical practice shows that change is a possibility with some people. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we can predict on the outset. If a client came in and said, I want to try to work at this and change it, I'd say, let's explore where you are and understand what you want, but not assume what our outcome is going to be here and try to really be open with really deepening your identity. People who tend to make change usually have partly a religious basis for wanting to make that change. Mm-hmm. And even after they've moved into possibly heterosexual relationships, generally, though not always, would report some continued same-sex attraction. Mm-hmm. Part of that, I'd say, let's honor that. You know, same-sex attraction is not just a disordered thing. As a man, I need to have other men that I'm close to and affectionate with who are a part of my nurturance. And unfortunately, I think we live in a society that does a very poor job of providing males an opportunity for being nurturant to each other. Mm-hmm. So I think as men, we all have some draw there. I think men in their affectional life can sexualize things a bit more readily. Mm-hmm. For women, again, I'm sorry, I'm not as familiar with the research there, though I know the clinical trials would be that some women do achieve that change.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, now, getting into more of the family, how should parents deal with it if they're concerned that one of their children may be experiencing some
of
this?
I think very much like they deal with other issues. I think sometimes this sends off alarm as if this is something very different in kind, because mm-hmm. people, you know, have a little more worrisomeness around the area of sexuality. But I'd say, first of all, to be very loving mm-hmm. and embracing of the child, to really acknowledge and hear about what they're thinking about themselves, what they're struggling with, and especially with children and adolescents, to be aware that identity development, including sexual identity, really is a long developmental mm-hmm. process. So I'd really caution against closing this up quickly. I'd caution against telling children, don't think about this. Mm-hmm. And I'd caution against saying, well, you must be gay, let's get you support for that. Mm-hmm. I think both things are a real disservice to the developing self. I think parents need to be in charge of behavior in their home. Mm-hmm. And with setting clear behavioral expectations. So whether a child has same-sex attraction or opposite-sex attraction, you know, I think the rules and the teaching about dating and about having relationships are pretty similar. Mm-hmm. You know, getting involved, we can look at all kinds of outcome research that's very well validated. Early sexual involvement, heterosexual or same-sex, mm-hmm. doesn't help people mm-hmm. and tends to have some negative outcomes for people. So I think to keep that sort of guarded approach about, we really expect you to practice chastity. But I'd really caution parents to be very loving. Remember that you will be, as a parent, the continued link for this child moving into adulthood.
Could you just talk about the caution that parents need to be careful? If they do want to bring their child to somebody to talk about this, they should really seek out a good Catholic therapist who is in line with church teaching.
Right.
Because there are others that would lead them in the wrong direction.
Right. I'd really agree that I would look at it being a good psychologist. And, you know, as a Catholic, my views of what a good psychologist yeah. are in line with my
right.
Catholic beliefs.
Right.
But I think developmentally, especially with young people, we don't want to rush into making conclusions.
Right.
If a young person is brought into me and says, I want to be a doctor, I'd say, you know, let's see. You know, mm-hmm. this is an identity. This whole phase of life from our early teen years into our mid to late 20s is really a time of consolidating identity. And let's not rush to conclusions. So with same-sex attraction, I say the same thing. Here's the attractions that you feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's talk about those. Let's understand what you're needing, what you're wanting. Try to understand how mm-hmm. that fits with your values. So I think to have someone, and I think as a Catholic parent, it makes sense to look for somebody who understands the Catholic teaching, which I think has some real wisdom. The thing I caution parents when they bring someone to me is I'm not there to change their child.
Mm-hmm.
I am there to support the development and growth of their child, and I do have a belief system that's consonant with the parents. But I'm not going to be teaching theology.
Right.
And I'm not going to be chastising anyone for behavior. I'm going to be very cautionary with adolescents and with young adults about acting out.
Mm-hmm.
And that would go with as well with heterosexual, but with same-sex attraction very definitely. That's not the royal road to self-discovery. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something to really be cautious about, because I think that sets right. the wiring in a little more difficult way.
You know, I just quickly, we have only a few couple seconds, mm-hmm. but we forgot to talk about the group Encourage with Father. And so I was going to ask
yes.
you, if you had parents that would call you,
yes.
or friends or family
right.
members, you would probably recommend the group Encourage.
I would recommend the Encourage group. I think it really helps parents see there's other parents out there. This doesn't mean you were a bad parent.
Right.
It doesn't mean your child is a bad child.
Right.
This is something that they're struggling with, and I think they have very human support around all of us with whatever issue we're struggling with.
Mm-hmm.
Just makes very sound sense, and I think the Encourage group provides that in a very non-judgmental way.
And we'll put that number on the,
terrific.
On the screen later, too. Well, yeah. thank you very much for being with us,
okay.
Paul.
Thank you, Colleen.
God bless you.
Thank you.
This evening's show is part one of three programs that we are presenting on the issue of homosexuality. You won't want to miss the upcoming shows, which will air on the next two Sundays. For the first time ever, the members of Courage step from the shadows of anonymity to face the camera. In these two programs entitled Into the Light and Cry of the Faithful, they reveal their struggles with homosexuality and the amazing grace of chastity within Courage. Thanks for watching, and God bless you and yours.
Not being able to deal with this issue had a serious impact on me and my happiness and my ability to just take care of life.
Once I got caught up into the lifestyle of being gay, what I found out eventually was it wasn't making me happy.
These men and women did not choose to have same-sex attractions, but they have chosen to live chastely according to the teachings of their Catholic faith. Their greatest obstacle is isolation. Courage is a Catholic spiritual support group ensuring that the choice of chastity does not mean isolation. If you would like more information about Courage, or if you could help support our ministry, call us at 212-268-1010.
Chastity, instead of being repression for me, ended up helping me to open up to the possibilities.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have comments, questions, or even suggestions for future shows, please contact Catholic Parents Online by calling us at 952-882-6704 or logging onto our website at www.catholicparents.org.